Hello and welcome to the Sunday Afternoon Podcast with Greg Rees. I am your host, Greg Rees, and today is Sunday, March 24th, 2024. March is flying by. Seems like a lot faster than February or January, but, you know, I guess it's all perspective. Well, I hope you guys are all doing well. I hope you guys are staying positive, keeping healthy, keeping fit, improving yourself in some way today, being a better person today than you were yesterday. Now I'm just getting personal, but I do hope that. That's a good way to live. That's a good way to live. For those regular listeners, my special subscribers, I'm officially quit smoking. I finally crossed the threshold. I finally did it. So that's good. I know I've been, we've been going on about that on our series of, solutions and health and improvement and cleansing. And that's foundational. You can't really get on with a cleanse and changing your life for the better with something like that. So that was good. And so I hope, I encourage you to, like I said last week, you know, to do something to make your life better. Like we've been talking about behind the paywall and stuff here. And I'll tell you the reason why I started smoking again. There's always excuses and they're never necessarily good excuses, but you know, they're somewhat valid. It was because I moved. It was a big move. And it was a bit of stress involved. In December, and I've alluded to this quite a bit, but I haven't said anything until today. But in December, early December, I think I left on the 3rd for Moscow, Russia, which is where I am right now. And I arrived here on the 5th, and I wouldn't say it was that stressful. It became a bit stressful. Like, I'll get into all the details of that. That's what we're going to talk about today, from Russia with love. But a part of it was just, I was quit smoking for over a year, and something about being in Russia, I felt like, I think I'm going to smoke at least a little bit. I wouldn't say everyone smokes here, but it's acceptable here. And there's something about, I guess growing up in the 80s, in the Cold War, seeing movies, I don't know, just seemed like something to do. And then, you know how it is, you start smoking and boom, back in, now you're back into it. But I burned that out. I'm done with that. Thank God. It's not for me. You know, if you smoke and you enjoy it and you're fine with it, then that's cool. I know plenty of smokers who love it and they're okay with it. But it's difficult for me to function in any kind of healthy routine with that habit. So anyways, I'm glad that's gone. Russia. Yeah, so... The nightmare that happened Friday. It would be Friday night here. Well, that was enough to finally push me over and come out in the open. I was just waiting to settle in a little bit more. I was already preparing to make this announcement. I held off for plenty of reasons that I'll get into in this talk today. But that was enough for me to come out and say, and I stand with the Russian people firmly. And that was a United States attack. I have no doubt. I'm sure many of you understand that that's pretty obvious too. I think anyone who's been paying attention can see that that's obviously what that was. I mean, That's the modus operandi of the U.S. State Department. That's how they've been attacking the U.S. citizens for decades. That's their thing. So, and they brought it here. I can't believe they brought it here. It's been a sad couple days here. You can feel it. The Russian people are very united. And I've only been here a short time, and what I'm going to tell you is what I believe from my experience, but it's evident to me. You can feel it. You can feel how close the people are here with each other, how they care about each other. And that was a big deal here. They're not used to that. I mean, they are. They've been putting up with it for over 1,000 years, which I think is why they're so united and why they care so deeply about each other, is because they're not spoiled little kids. They've been enduring violence from foreigners for over 1,000 years, and they've survived. So where to begin? I guess I'll just go back to the beginning. So my regular listeners know I've been talking about leaving. I don't know if I was so open about leaving the country. I think I was. But I was definitely talking about getting out of Florida and making a move for a while, which is nothing new. I move all the time. I move about every year. I was in Florida for about, was it 3 years? Two years? 2 years. And it was really, there was a lot of reasons. The main reasons were when my coworker, Owen Schroyer, was thrown in jail for 2 months for questioning the election, I realized there's no more rules. January 6th as well. I realized that there's just no more rules. They can arrest me at any minute. Now they tend to ignore me, and I'm not a big election politician pusher. In fact, I don't think elections have ever changed a thing in our lifetime, and if they do in 2024, then it'll be the first ever. And I don't even see how that's possible, because while the president definitely has a little bit of power, they definitely don't have enough power to change anything in the system. So they would, I could see maybe if there's something, a shift in power, they need a, this is a whole other subject. It's neither here nor there, but it's not something I push. I'm just normally ignored by the enemy. I don't think I'm a threat. I think a lot of people have said things like, a lot of people have suggested that I should be careful. I should watch my back because I'm a big voice out there. Maybe, but I'm not worried because they ignore me. That's what they do with me. And I would guess the reason they ignore me is because I'm not like, I'm not just political. I cover all kinds of stories. And I tend to cover some stories that I believe in are very interesting and important that a lot of people think are crackpot stories. You know, I did a flat earth video. I talk about aliens. I don't like that term, but you know, I talk about non-human creatures quite often. I talk about remote viewing. I talk about subjects that I find very interesting. I know a lot of you find very interesting, but I also know that a lot of people roll their eyes at these things and think that this is what stupid people talk about, you know, because everyone knows that life is really just all about red versus blue, vote, you know? So it's easy for them to ignore me because a lot of people like I said, roll their eyes at that. And they're like, oh my God, that guy's crazy. But that might change because they hate Russia. And they might not ignore me anymore. They might shut me down. I might not be on Substack for all of 2024. My days might be numbered now. They hate Russia. And the reason I came here was, I guess, out of peace and brotherly love. After growing up in the 80s during the Cold War, it made me look into Russia more. It made me, and the more I looked into Russia, the more intrigued I was, the more interested I was. I actually, back in the late, what would it have been, early 90s, late 80s, when I was in the Marine Corps, I was studying Russian on my own, thinking that maybe I'd get a chance to go to Russia. I didn't get too far. I think I remembered how to count to 10 for the rest of my life. Один, два, три, четыре, пять. Let me start over again. Один, два, три, четыре, пять, шесть, семь, восемь, девять, десять. As you can see, I'm still a little rough, but I am learning. I picked the language up again, and I'm learning. Я немного понимаю по-русски. Я немного говорю по-русски. And then when they started bringing this Russia thing out hardcore again, well, with the Ukraine war, which is really the U.S. war against Russia, then I knew I wasn't having it. I wasn't going to sit around and play this game of Russia's the bad guy. It's nonsense. So I think that's one of the main reasons I decided to move here. Okay, getting back to that, I knew I had to leave the country. I knew it was either stay in the country and wait. Now, if the people were uniting together for a revolution, or as Ron Paul said, a relevution, I don't know how you pronounce that, then I would have stayed. I love America. That is my home. I'm not a flag worshiper. You know, I worship God. And I'm free to roam the world. The world is my home. I'm not any bootstepping nationalist flag worshiper, but I do love America, and I do love Americans. But I signed up for this. The whole reason I got involved in this was because I believed in a worldwide Ron Paul revolution. That's what I believed, and I saw it happening. It is happening. It's just not happening so much in America. America was greatly defeated spiritually and psychologically after January 6th. Everyone, this is my observation. You could disagree with me, but it was heartbreaking for me. It took me a year to finally assess the whole situation, over a year. But I was desperately trying to find an excuse to stay. But I'm not interested. I'm not going to fight a civil war. That's weak and cowardly. One side is fairly awake, or at least waking up, and they have a lot of guns, and they're not afraid to use them. The other side is brainwashed, and they think they're doing the right thing. And not only are they brainwashed, but they're frightened. And they're confused, and they're scared. So there is no civil war. It would be what's the right word? Bloodbath? It's a little overused and stupid. It would be shooting fish in a barrel at the behest of the government. It would be the enemy, the government, the bad guys, mind-controlling one side of the country into killing the other side of the country for their benefit. That's what a so-called civil war was. But that's what everyone's ready for that. Why? I have an opinion. My opinion is because everyone became afraid after January 6th. And I understand it. I just said, I don't want to go to jail. I mean, I'll go to jail if I have to. I thought about it. I thought I could stay and go to jail and be a martyr. But first of all, I wouldn't be a martyr. I would just be forgotten. And my work would end. And that's my weapon in this information war. And it is just a drop in the bucket. You know, I'm just doing my part. I'm one of millions using my voice in the information war. But that is my role. And so do I stay and wait to get thrown in jail to where now I'm, good luck, good job. You've done your work. Now you're screwed to be forgotten about and rot away. Does that serve any purpose? I thought about it. Maybe it does. I don't know. I considered it. Or is it best to leave and find somewhere where you have more freedom of speech to where you can continue your work further? Extend the possibility of working through this more. And I chose that. I definitely would have stayed if people were ready to unite and stand up against the government, but that is not what's happening. In fact, every time I suggest that idea, I'm laughed at and attacked. You know, people just don't want to hear that. They've given up on that. And they've decided that they'd rather fight a completely weak and easy target, which is lame and sad and disgraceful. And I'm not having any part of it. I was trying to find a tribe or a camp. If I had anything like that, I'm sure I would have stayed. But I was all alone. I had some friends down in the Panhandle, but they were all looking to go somewhere too. You know, most survivors with intelligence that I know are skidooting. And I had some friends down there also who have some skills in the military combat area that are holding out, hoping for the day when maybe their skills will be appreciated. But anyways, that's a whole other subject too. The division that's happening in America is shameful and embarrassing. And it's a pathway to failure, in my opinion. And I'm learning a lot from the Russian people. Like I said, the Russian people here are very united and they care about each other and they look out for each other. It's very obvious. I've only been here a few months, and it's very obvious. And I think this is from multiple people. Multiple Russians have told me this, and some of my expat friends that are very familiar with Russian culture. It seems to be the consensus that the reason that is the case is because of the suffering that they've endured, not just in their lifetime. You know, the 20th century was definitely hardest on the Russian people than anyone else. No one can compare. So in the recent history, yeah, they've endured quite a bit. But it goes all the way back. It's in their genes. You know, they've been invaded several times in the past 1,000 years. And they've managed to survive because they band together. They love each other. And I don't see that in America. People are very openly against each other in America. So, I mean, how does that work? I think you know, I hope America survives this, but the hard truth is for America to ever get to a point of the emotional, spiritual, and intellectual maturity that I see here in Russia, is they're going to have to hurt. We're going to have to hurt. We're going to have to suffer. And not only that, but survive it. And the only way we're going to survive it is with each other. And that is how these people here have learned the respect they have for each other. Is through experience, they've realized that they would not be here if it were not for their neighbors. So, where was I? Yeah. I couldn't find the unity against the real enemy, which is the government, the U.S. government. So I was like, all right, well, where do I go? Not an easy decision. I mean, there's not a lot of choices. There's a lot of places that are definite no's, you know, obviously. Mexico is actually a possibility. I have some friends that are there. I mean, Mexico is a big, big place. And there are places that are dangerous and you don't want to go, but there are places that are lovely from what I hear. I haven't been to those places, but I have friends there. That's a possibility. Fairly close. I considered that. Latin America, Nicaragua was on my short list. Paraguay was on the short list. Japan was definitely on this list. I've been there before. I love Japan, but the problem with Japan is it's not so easy to go there as a foreigner for any length of time. Thailand was where I thought it was going to be. I was almost positive it was going to be Thailand, either. Was it Chiang Mai or Phuket? It seemed like the weather was going to be perfect. Seemed like the food was going to be good. The cost of living was good. It's pretty laid back. The government seems reasonable. But once I saw Russia, the light just went off in my head. And the first thing that kept me from Russia was, to be honest, the weather. I mean, I grew up in Cleveland, which is basically just like Moscow. In fact, I would argue Cleveland probably gets a little colder because of the lake effect. But I've escaped that cold weather for 10 years. For the past 10 years, I've lived in, you know, the South. Mostly Florida and Texas and Hawaii. So I've become quite used to good weather. So I kept thinking about Russia. I was like, maybe I can go to Russia. And then I was like, no, why? It's too cold there. But once I got over that, and it only took a second, it was like flipping a switch in my head. It was like, Greg, you spent several years in weather just like that. It's just like home. It's not as bad as you think. Once I did that, it was obvious to me that Russia was the place. Thailand was an escape. That's what Thailand was. Thailand, I thought, well, I could just ride out my days there, wearing sandals, sitting on the beach, eating Thai food. But there is no escape. I don't believe there's any escape from what's happening right now. This is a worldwide thing. We're going to get into that too, as to what exactly is going on. But it's a worldwide thing that's going on. It's no little thing. I don't believe there's any escape. And so Russia became the obvious way. And for me, it's a mission of brotherly love and peace. That's what it is for me. I'm going to lose some, whether or not, let's say they don't come after me now and they don't shut off my banks and shut off my Substack. I don't think Substack will do it. Substack's been really good to me, but Substack's payment processor, Stripe, that's another story. They seem to be aligned with this faction in America that hates Russia. So they might cut me off. But let's just say they don't. Great. That's awesome. I hope they don't, because I like to make a living, and I've been working on this Substack for a while, and I enjoy hanging out with you guys on Sunday. But even if they don't, I'm going to lose a lot of subscribers. There are people listening right now who hate Russia too, believe it or not. There's only two reasons why that would be the case. One is you fall for the lies of the mainstream media. Believe it or not, some people that listen to this still fall for the lies of the mainstream media. Or you worship a flag and you're a bootstrapping nationalist who is ready to enter a world of isolationism and fight other countries like we've been doing for centuries. That's fine. I'm not in that camp. And I would say, I think it's clear to me that most of my regular listeners here are not in that camp either. We are ready to move on. We're ready to evolve and stop taking the bait. Like many have pointed out, David Icke, probably most popularly in recent years, but also by William Bramley in the great book, Gods of Eden, that I always talk about. Wars don't just happen. I mean, little skirmishes and conflicts and disputes will always happen amongst the tribes of humanity. You know, it's part of life on Earth. But wars, like big old wars and stuff, though, they're very easily documented that they've all been contrived. They've all been manipulated by the same powers for their benefit and not for ours. And a lot of us are sick of that. A lot of us are sick of being used and lied to and made to kill each other for stupid reasons that have nothing to do with us. A lot of us are sick of being sick. A lot of us are sick of being exploited and played like dummies. And I'm one of those people, so. But I'll lose some, who cares, right? I mean, that's not, like, I'm not, God, what a nice world it would be if you had the luxury of worry, of like, focusing on trying to be popular, you know? And to make a living. Oh, I just want more followers. I just want to, like, I'm being sarcastic. I think those days were sad and pathetic, and I'm kind of glad they're over. But that's not where we live today. You know, I'm just, like I've said many times before, I'm just trying to do my small part. I love my work because I feel like it's an honor to have it. You know, there are millions of people just like me that are doing this work, and I'm sure they probably all feel the same. And I'm going to keep doing it even if I got no followers. Doesn't matter. Followers don't care. It's a matter of doing your part, having something meaningful to do, to speak the truth and follow your heart and do what you believe is right in this time. You know, that was the first motivation of mine to get involved in this, was to put myself in a position where I was out in the open, in the public, where it was clear where I stood. It was almost as if I've always kind of believed that God sees everything. And I've even believed that not just God sees everything, but the controllers here see everything and they record everything. And so I did not want to be ambiguous. I wanted to be clear. I wanted it to be definitive. Is that right? Definitive. Back in 2018, I had this. Well, it was actually 2017. It was at the end of 2017. I had a very deep, passionate desire to make it absolutely clear on public record where I stand. I am against the U.S. government and their corruption. I am against all the lies. I am against all these secret societies. I am against the New World Order. I just wanted that to be known on public record. That it was a personal thing. It's neither here nor there, but that's just, but that's a big part of my work too. I just want to do my part and let it be known. This is where I stand. I worship God. I'm for we the people. And when I say we the people, I'm talking about everyone. I'm talking about my brothers and sisters up north in Canada, down in South America, and over here in Russia. All over the world, people. People of Earth being screwed over by this non-human force. So, yeah. I got to remember to get there too. I mean, if I don't remember, I'll say it now. One of the things, one of the many things I love about the Russian people, first, it's very clear, my favorite thing about Russia is the people. The people are amazing. They are very intelligent. There doesn't seem to be an issue of pride or ego here. It seems more humble and brotherly. Like I said, it's a very close-knit kind of social thing. It's I don't know. It's anyways, but you know, I just did my Aliens on Earth part one, and part two is I finished writing it. It's probably going to be a week or two now before it's done. Definitely less than 2 weeks before it's out. It's in the easy part now. Could even be done in a week. But anyways, I actually had it part one translated to Russian. And what I've learned is that the Russian people, everyone I talk to, doesn't matter their age or whatever, everyone here seems interested in subjects of like aliens and secret societies. And everyone here seems to understand that that's a part of life, that that's a real part of life. Whereas a lot of Americans roll their eyes and snicker at that and think that, no, it's just all about Republicans versus Democrats, you dummy. So the Russian people are very advanced in a lot of ways, in my opinion. I will be putting a link to that where you can find that video. The Aliens on Earth series is part of my exclusive series, which is how I make a living for now until they shut me down, which they might now. But the backup plan is Boosty, boosty.tu, which is I'm going to have a link down in the beneath this. That's my backup plan. A lot of Russians use that when Patreon was taken away. And it's not bad. It seems it's like Substack. You know, you can upload videos. You can do all that. And it seems pretty stable. It's been around for a while. And so if you'd like, you can go there and check out. I have part one of the Aliens videos for free, but it's in Russian. I had a friend here translate it and do the voiceover. So that's just to try to attract some Russians while I'm here. And then part two will be behind the paywall on Boosty, just like it is on Substack. And you can sign up at Boosty if you want for free. That is, like I said, my backup plan. If they do, I have your emails. That's one of the nice things about Substack is that they don't just keep, when you sign up for my Substack, I am allowed, you know, I have access to that, which is very fair. I love Substack. Substack has been great. I have experienced no censorship problems on Substack at all. And it's been over a couple of years. And when I first started, that's what I heard. I heard about it from Celia Farber. She said, no, it's good. And then I noticed right away, well, they're not censoring anyone talking about the vaccine. So that's pretty good, because that seems like the biggest thing that anyone's censoring. And here we are 2 years plus, and it's fine. And I would expect it to be fine. But like I said, it's Stripe. And it's more powerful forces, you know. I mean, they could just go after my bank and shut my bank down. They could do a lot of things. We'll see. But that's on Boost. You can sign up for there if you want. But yeah, the people here, you start talking about aliens or secret societies, and people seem to, their eyes light up. They're into that. They find it there. They'll say, oh, very interesting. I agree. It is very interesting. So yeah, I chose Russia. It wasn't that hard. In fact, they're looking for people. They're looking for skilled workers. They're looking for all types. It was easy. I hired a Russian attorney, immigration attorney, which blew my mind, because it was like $40 for a consultation. And then I had some follow-up questions, so I wrote back and I said, how much would it cost me to ask you some questions? Because I'm used to American lawyers. And he replied, he's like, well, you already paid me for a consultation, so it's free. You know, what do you want? And I had several questions, and he took time and answered all of them thoroughly, politely. I was blown away. I was like, wow, it's not like that in America. But it was easy. It wasn't like some countries you can just go with a passport. You had to get a tourist visa. But to get a tourist visa, you needed a passport with enough time on it. I think it was at least 6 months' time. You needed an invitation, which is a formality thing, but it was easy to get. I got it through my Russian immigration lawyer. And you needed to fill out an e-application and print it out. That was it. Oh, and then, of course, the photographs for your visa. And the Russian embassy only gave me 30 days. My Russian attorney said, that's very strange. He said, everyone gets a 3-year tourist visa. He's like, I don't know of anyone who's only gotten 30 days. So I was a little worried about that. I thought maybe it was because of Jan 6th, maybe I'm on some list, maybe because of where I work, maybe because of the war. And I mentioned these with my attorney, and he says, well, maybe, but still, it seems strange. So it was like a leap of faith. I was like, well, I only got 30 days. It's a long-ass flight. I'm going. I had to sell everything because of sanctions. There's no shipping. Normally when I make I've moved around the country. I've moved around the world. I don't have a lot of stuff, but I usually ship instruments. I usually ship guitars, banjo, whatever, you know, ship things like that. But I couldn't, there is no shipping to Russia. That kind of blew my mind too. Like, I went to the post office even. I figured, well, at least the post office will. And I asked, can I ship to Russia? And it was like, the record needle, like everyone stopped and looked and kind of like solemnly like shook their head like, no, you can't do that. So I had to sell everything, which is quite liberating, actually. It was, at first it was a bit, sluggish and difficult, I guess, at first. But once you're gone, once the stuff's gone and you get rid of it, it is a great feeling. And one I'm used to. I've spent most of my life with very little I've spent most of my life with enough possessions that I can go on foot and carry it. And so that's basically where I got back down to. Came out here, and then I only had 30 days, and met some friends out here, got some support. I had to go to Armenia right after Christmas time when my 30 days was up, because I had to go to Armenia to extend my visa. It was quite lovely in Armenia. It's one of the oldest Christian nations continuously standing on earth. I went to a monastery that I think was like 1400 years old. Went to the Armenian Genocide Museum. It's a beautiful place. The weather was pretty good there while I was there. But I had to go there to extend my visa. I successfully got a 3-year tourist visa, which I have now. And then came back to Moscow. And found myself an apartment. Most of the apartments here are furnished, which is pretty sweet. I move about every year. Even if I'm staying in the same city, I tend to move. Why? I don't know. It's just a habit I've had that I've been doing since I was 18. And I don't get furniture. It's just not something that I do. I mean, I guess when I have a wife or a girlfriend, then it's, you know, you can't not get furniture. But those have been short-lived times. And I mean, I guess I guess girlfriends don't count. I guess I've had several apartments where I didn't get furniture and I had girlfriends. But if they live with you, it's a different story. That's the thing. And that's been short-lived in my life. I've probably only spent about a total of 4 or 5 years actually living with a partner. And so anyways, the point being is I'm not in the habit of getting furniture. I'm in the habit of living quite mobile. One of the reasons I don't get furniture is because I'm like, well, I'm only going to be here for a year probably. So I'll get a workspace. I'll get a desk. And I'll usually get a bed, and I'll usually get some type of couch or chair or something cozy I can chill out in and relax. But often I don't. Often it'll just be the bed. But anyways, this place is like fully furnished, and I'm the first person to live here in 7 years. The owners, you know, got it from their parents 7 years ago, and they've never rented it out. I'm the first person, and it's furnished with all brand new, nice German furniture. And the price is right. It's like cheaper than America. So I'm feeling pretty settled in. And I'll be continuing to do my Reese reports, even if I come under fire from the US government and the banking system and they shut me down. My backup plan is Boosty. And so I'll be able to keep doing them there. And might even find it's smart to just create my own thing on reesereport.com, which I started off doing. Actually, yeah, if any of you are have any suggestions for that, I do have a friend of mine who does my website, and I'm sure he can do it. But he might not be a specialist in that, in video. But anyways, right now Boosty's a good backup. And one of the reasons that they might come after me is because of what I'm going to start doing here. Some of you might have seen it. I didn't really promote it that much, but I just started a show here called America 24. I just did one episode 2 weeks ago with Dan Lyman and Chris Emery. And I'll be doing that starting, I think again, we'll be starting up again this week. And we'll be talking about the attack in Moscow. And America 24 is going to be mostly with American guests that I'll have on to talk about the craziest, most dangerous year in American history, in my opinion, which is 2024, the year we're in right now. And the point of America 24 is to give... I have some friends here in Russia that are going to translate the episode in real time and make it available to a fairly wide Russian audience. And the idea is to give Russian people a perspective, a genuine perspective, in my opinion, of what's happening in America outside of CNN or their own, you know, pundits that have their opinions about what's going on. It'll be an American perspective on America in this crazy year, broadcast from Russia. And it'll also be made on YouTube. I created a YouTube channel for it called America 24. And so it will be for an American audience, but it's the general push behind it is mostly for a Russian audience. But I am here to help, to do my small part to, you know, bridge the gap between the East and the West, which is best done in Russia. I think Russia, I know in my heart, Russians are our friends. Every time anyone finds out that I'm from America here, even with what's going on, and people here, they know that what's happening in Ukraine is because of America. They know that. I think they all know that. Just like they know that what happened this weekend was from America. They know that. And yet they still love us. They're intelligent enough and emotionally intelligent enough to understand that we have a horrible government, an evil, evil government, but it's not us. And they still love us. I have yet to meet anyone here who hasn't just shown total love for America. Every time they can tell by my accent, even when I try to speak Russian, that I'm not native. And then they'll say, откуда ты? I think I'm saying that, which means, where are you from? And then I'll say, я из Америка, which I think I'm saying wrong. I think I'm supposed to say, я из Америка. Ameriki, ya is Ameriki, which means I'm from America. And immediately, without fail, every time this happens, their eyes light up, they smile, their arms open as if they're ready to give me a hug. And they say, oh, America's so good. We love America. And so it's astounding to me. And when I first came here, I was a little nervous. I was like, I was thinking people might spit in my face, you know? But that just goes back to the intelligence and the compassion here. People here have been through enough already that they're on a whole other level. So I'll be doing that show, which I already started, and that's going to start. We're going to start. That'll start becoming more regular. It's new, so it's going to be, you know, working the kinks out. And I might possibly get a work visa here, where I can work officially and make a living, which would be nice. Especially if I'm going to be cut off. I keep saying that, but this is obviously a real possibility. The sanctions aren't really hurting Russia. The sanctions really aren't hurting Russia at all. Yesterday, I went to the grocery store. I went to a big one. There's grocery stores everywhere. I usually just go to the one in the corner of my street, but I went to a big one yesterday, like a Walmart-sized grocery store. And I mean, there's absolutely anything you want. There's as much abundance here as there is in America. But the sanctions can hurt certain things, like mostly foreigners, like, or Americans. Like, they can hurt me. Like, they can say, you're not allowed to make a living anymore. We're shutting you down. And I think, like I said, they don't seem to care about my reports, but they might care if I start showing the truth about the Russian people, which is really kind of effed up. And that's another reason why I'm saying it, because I want to make it clear. If they do come after me now, it's because they hate and I love. And that's what I'm going to be showing, is the love and how the Russian people are our friends. That's my main objective of being here. And if they do come after me, that is absolutely why they're doing it, because they are full of hate and they do not want you to know how similar you are to the Russian people. They do not want you to know how the Russian people are kind and gentle and intelligent and good people. They don't want you to know that. They want you to think that they are scary and that they're your enemy. Because the people we're dealing with, the U.S. government and their allies, are absolute evil. So, but the job I might have here is pretty exciting. It's actually, when I was on my way over here on the plane, I caught myself having this fantasy. Ever since I was a kid, I imagine things. I daydream, I guess you could say, what do you call it? And they tend to be automatic. Like, I don't put a lot of thought into it. They just start playing, little visions start playing in my head, and if I like those visions, I just start watching, and then the more I watch, the more they play. I'm sure you guys can relate. So on the way over here on the plane, I was thinking about having a show where I, like Anthony Bourdain style show, where I explore Russia and meet people and learn about the culture and write about it and make a show about it and share it with the West on a true mission of brotherly love. And then back in December, when I met some new friends here, I was offered that. They said, we would love to hire you to do, they pitched it to me like that. We would love to hire you to have your own show, and we'll send you all over Russia, with St. Petersburg and Siberia, Crimea, Stalingrad, Leningrad. I'm sure I'm missing a bunch of places, with a camera crew, and you will write it, and you will, you know, just to explore it and share what you learn. And they wanted to give me complete freedom, because they made it clear. They, like, we believe that America and Russia are very similar, and we believe that no matter what you say, you're going to expose that. Like we can give you total freedom of speech, and you'll see what we're talking about. And then when you share it, they said the Russian people will love that. They said the Russian people will love seeing that, and they are excited to share it with the West, to share with the West how similar we are. And I'm down. That hasn't happened yet. That may not happen. I may try to do that on my own somehow. I mean, that would be easy enough. I suppose if I get shut off from the West, then I suppose I'll have more time to start that on my own. But that's a possibility. But if I do get hired with a work visa to do that, I imagine that's going to become very, very popular here. That's what they're telling me. And I imagine it's going to become very popular in the West as well. And then that is when I imagine they will say, goodbye, Greg. But I don't care. You know, I mean, like I said, I was okay if they locked me in jail. I've lived a full life. I've already had my dark night of the soul. I've already had my hero's journey, which had nothing to do with what I'm doing today. It just liberated me to the point where I was able to focus on what I do today. What I do today is, in a lot of ways, giving back. It's giving thanks for what I already went through. What I do today is just simply a blessing that I have to do my small part. And if it wasn't for going through the dark night of the soul and having my own hero's journey, if it wasn't for that, I'd probably be lost. I wouldn't be able to do the work I do today. So my point being is, I could die today and I'd be happy. I'm fine. I feel like I've already had my fair share. I've been given my hard lessons. I've fallen down, hit bottom, climbed back up, healed. I'm not perfect. I don't think I'll ever be perfect. But my point being is, I've lived a full life, and every day, literally, I'm at the point now where every day I wake up, I'm just grateful. I'm like, wow, I got another day. Awesome. Thank you, God. Thank you, God. I'm gonna try to make the best out of this day that you just gave me. And every night when I hit that pillow, it's thank you, God. Thank you, God, for another day. I really appreciate it. So, you know, I'm not afraid of death. I'm not afraid of jail. I'm not afraid of them shutting me down. Life goes on. I don't know how long I'm here for. I suppose if they come after me and shut me down for trying to share the beauty and the humanity of the Russian people, I suppose if they do that, then I might just have to stay here indefinitely. You know, it could be worse. I'm learning a lot. Okay, I'm going to wrap up by sharing what I've learned in the past few months. And I hope I wasn't all over the place. I hope this was somewhat interesting. It was mostly just an announcement that I'm in Russia. Something that I've been kind of hinting at to my main subscribers for months now. The announcement, I was hinting at an announcement, which I thought was going to be the show, the Anthony Bourdain style show, but that's still kind of up in the air, mainly because there's a war going on and things are pretty crazy. But after what happened this weekend, I realized I could not keep it a secret anymore. And I say it because I stand with the Russian people. And I love America and I love the American people, but the future is we can't fight each other. Because if we do, we're just serving an evil force and we're being used and manipulated and we're being played the dummies. And I'm not having that. And I don't want that for any of you. We're better than that. We're not dummies. So anyways, here's what I've learned. And I won't be talking about the horrible massacre of the U.S. state-sponsored terrorism. I would say U.S.-directed terrorism attack. That'll be my next report. That'll come out Tuesday. I'm still gathering as much information on it as possible. But it seems pretty clear. And the good news on that is that the Russian Federation, they allegedly captured 11 of the terrorists. And some of the ones we've seen are like patsies, in my opinion. But hopefully if they got 11, then they've gotten the actual professionals too. But what I've learned – what have I learned here? First, I told you I learned the people are just, you know, everyone says, even the Russians say they're very serious and kind of closed off in a shell. And yeah, I guess that's somewhat true. I mean, I'm a friendly American, so I smile and I'm pretty friendly. And I do get some looks, but they're not rude. They're just more like, they're used to it, obviously. I guess they've seen friendly Americans before, but I don't get anything rude. And the young people love it. The younger people are very smiley and friendly, and they seem to love the American friendliness. I've talked about their, you can sense the community. Here's a story, maybe it doesn't seem like a big deal to you, but I grew up in the city mostly. I've lived in some small towns, but mostly I've lived in cities in America. And the other, it was like 3 weeks ago, it was still ice on the ground. I was coming back from the gym, and an old lady came up to me, and she was speaking Russian. She was asking me something. I couldn't understand her. So I was saying, Я немного понимаю по-русски. Извините, пожалуйста. Я не понимаю, which basically means, excuse me, please. I don't understand. And she finally smiled and then just took my hand and she, basically she was asking me to help her walk up a flight of stairs because there was ice on them. And so after me trying to explain, I didn't understand. She just basically smiled, took my hand and had me do it, help her up the stairs. And it made my, I would say it made my day, but it's, I'm still talking about it. So it made my month. And I've shared that story with a bunch of Russians here that I've been hanging out with. And to me, that was just like, that's never happened to me in the States. People don't, I mean, you might disagree with me. You might live in a small town where things are different, but where I grew up, where I'm used to in America, people don't reach out for help to people around them. Moscow is a big city. It's one of the biggest cities in the world. It doesn't feel big like New York, though. It feels, it has a small town feel to it. I learned that during COVID, Russia only really played along for 2 weeks. And I've heard this from everyone I've talked to. And I think if you're, most of the people I talk to are obviously expats, English speaking foreigners, because I don't speak Russian. I'm learning, but I don't speak it. It does include some Russians, because I do know some Russians here that speak English. But pretty much everyone I've talked to, the subject has come up and the answer is the same. What I've been told is that Russia initially shut down back in March of 2020 with the whole world and went along with it, caught as if they were, you know, they didn't know, they're being cautious. But after 2 weeks, they stopped playing. They opened everything back up and they went back to business as usual. And even during the 2 weeks, no one obeyed the laws, from what I was told. They would have signs in the store saying, you know, we're shut down or whatever, but they wouldn't be. People, and no one would wear the mask. They would wear their mask around their chin or their neck. Even the police would wear their mask down. No one enforced it. It was mass. What's the word? Peaceful. There's a word for it. Where you don't obey the laws. Non-compliance. Mass non-compliance. Peaceful mass non-compliance. Which is how I thought it was going to be in America. When they first said, put the masks on in America, I was like, yeah, no one's going to do that. I was wrong. I was astounded. So they don't seem to be brainwashed here. I mean, I'm sure they got to be, like, in some ways. I may be a Russophile, but I have an open mind, I'm not a government lover. I'm not a flag worshiper. I'm not a statist. But that's what I was told by everyone. And the vaccines here were different. They call them Sputnik. And the World Health Organization did not like it. In fact, they did not find it acceptable. And they were making a big fuss about it. How Russia's vaccines are no good. That, to me, is a good sign. And I haven't talked to anyone who has told me that there's been any sudden deaths or unexpected heart attacks or uptick of, that doesn't seem to be a thing here, which is very interesting to me. And I have some friends in the States that are researchers that told me otherwise. Like when I was coming here, I had some friends of mine warning me. They're like, look, they're no good. They're just as bad as everyone else. And I saw no evidence of that in my research. And that's one of the reasons I came here, because for 20 years I've been Russia has come up in my research, and it's always been in very positive ways. And I wanted to see for myself, because the only answer I've gotten, like I said, even from my more like reasonable friends in America, that even a lot of my reasonable friends are still like, you can't trust Russia. They're very sneaky. That's what the liberals say too. That's the saying. That's what the Americans say. I know there's no evidence, but they're very sneaky. Okay. I don't know what that means. I can't read minds. I can only go off of, facts and actions. So the other interesting thing, this I've talked about before without saying I learned it here, but here in Russia, it seems like everyone knows about a pole shift that's coming. The Russian Federation is open about it. I've seen videos. You can find them too. Look up Russian pole shift Arctic, stuff like that. You'll find videos of Putin visiting the Arctic where they're building massive infrastructure up in the Arctic. And they're expecting a pole shift to come in our lifetime. And they're expecting when this pole shift comes, it will thaw the Russian Arctic. And this is not like a quiet government plan. This is openly talked about to the point where like I asked a young 20-year-old bartender who clearly was not interested in politics, didn't follow politics, but they knew all about this pole shift. And they knew everything I told you. They were like, oh yeah, they expect a place to thaw and they're building up for it. This is very interesting to me because this has been one of my favorite subjects, favorite because it's interesting. And I think it explains everything. But I've been studying it for over 20 years. Pole shift, a lot of people argue that the term pole shift, but that's just that was the most popular thing that people called it back in the day. I tend to like the term pole shift. If you look at certain maps, there's a map, the Mayan calendar, not maps, calendars and timepieces. The Mayan calendar has mainly it's made up of circles, three main circles, if I remember correctly, but two of them are quite big, one inside of the other, and one inside of the other moves around the outer ring or the inner ring of the, if you look up Mayan calendar, you'll see what I'm talking about. But it appears as if I don't know where we live. I tend to think that the surface is flat because by all mathematics and all measure and all observation, it is. And so you're either to believe your own measure, your own science, your own mathematics, or you're to believe that you can't trust your own mathematics, you can't trust your own observations, and so you got to believe some model that doesn't mathematically add up. I can't do that. I have to go with my own scientific measure, my own observations. And by those calculations, the surface, at least, is flat. I think my observations also tell me that we're inside of a sphere. Like the Earth is a globe, but we're on the inside of it on a flat surface. And there's still, everything else still makes sense and mathematically adds up. And everything I'm saying, it might sound a little strange to some of you, but it is scientific and it does all add up more than the heliocentric model by far. But that's not what this show's about. But on the model I'm describing on a flat surface, there is still magnetic north, which is in the center. And there would still be a pole shift. And so based on, I think the other clock I think is in the Netherlands. I'm going to look it up because it might be of interest to some of you. I don't even know if I'm going to find it. I'm just going to try. I'm not going to be able to find it. Oh, wait, that looks like it right there. Oh, it did come up. Interesting. I searched flat earth clock and you're going to get actual flat earth clocks, but that's not what I was looking for. What I was looking for is the Prague, as in Czechoslovakia, Prague astronomical clock. So if you want to see what I'm talking about, if you're interested in what I'm saying right now about a pole shift, then yeah, look this up. Look up the Prague astronomical clock, and you'll know that you got it right when you see a circle inside of a circle on a clock face. This idea was pitched to me by a British gentleman, Dave Murphy, I believe is his name. David Murphy, I think. Apologies if I'm getting that wrong. And it stuck with me because it made a lot of sense. But basically the idea is, because I've been following the pole shift for many, many years. I've been researching it. And it does seem to be cyclical. It seems to be, like I've always described it, as a clock, a cyclical event, like an eclipse is predictable on a calendar. So is these pole shifts. They are predictable. For those in the know, they know exactly when they're coming and they know exactly what's going to happen. And that does seem to be the case. And if that's true, then obviously someone knows what it is. And when you look at this clock I'm talking about, I guess I'm not the only one that associates this clock with what I'm saying, because it does come up if you search flat earth. So you could also find the clock if you just search flat earth clock and just ignore the ones that are the more modern looking ones that show a flat surface. You're looking for a more ancient looking clock with a circle that moves around the outer edge of another circle. And if you're looking at that image, picture that the big full circle. Oh, no, that's not true. Picture the smaller circle being the entire surface of the Earth that we can travel right now, with the outer edge being a frozen ice wall. And inside of that smaller circle is a sun and a moon that move around like the yin-yang. This is all theoretical, of course. Now, as the pole shift, which is what, every 12,000 years? Every 26,000 years, we don't know. A lot of people seem to place it around that, the great year. The great year, which is astrological. So every time one of these pole shifts happens, imagine it just shifts by a certain amount of degrees. What would it be? Let me pull up a calculator. You know, the Bible actually talks about a shift happening where it shifted by, I think it said 15 degrees. So you're looking at 360 degrees as a circle divided by 12. if we're to believe that, divided by 12, 30 degrees. All right, that's interesting. There does seem to be two shifts within a great year. And so maybe the great year is 30 degrees and maybe half of a great year is 15. So maybe that adds some credence to that biblical verse. Okay, so if you're looking at this image and you're looking at the smaller circle is our current traversable surface, sun and a moon and the yin-yang inside of the small circle, creating day and night, an outer edge frozen. Then a pole shift happens, maybe every 12, 13,000 years, maybe every 26,000 years. And in that pole shift, that circle that you're looking at shifts like a clock, which would explain the historical accounts that when this thing happens, it happens, it like works up to it, but once it happens, it's pretty immediate, like within days. It goes. And when it moves, it's also moving. It's moving along. It's moving over this larger area. And so when it moves, now certain areas that we haven't been aware of for at least thousands of years begin to thaw. Certain areas begin to freeze over. The face of the earth changes so slightly. Continents may rise and fall. This would explain why we have maps of Antarctica that look very different, you know, that look like it was once not frozen, it was inhabited, it was mapped out. It would explain quite a bit. And when global warming started years ago, I think the first time I ever heard global warming, I was already studying the pole shift, and immediately I was like, oh, this is a cover story for the pole shift, because the climate's already starting to change, and they're going to lie to us about a pole shift, and so they need to come up with some excuse as to why the climate is acting crazy. And this is perfect also because they can milk it for money. Not only can they lie to us about the pole shift, but they can say, oh, but look, if you give us all kinds of money or whatever, they can do whatever about the lie. So that seemed clear to me. A lot of people say, oh, they're controlling all the weather. Maybe. I don't think so. I don't think so. I think they can control certain things. I think a lot of the earthquakes are caused by man, whether on purpose or inadvertently through drilling, or both maybe. But by and large, I do think we are working up towards one of these pole shifts, one of these calendar days. We'll see. Anyways, the point being is, we could talk about that for a whole series, a whole episode actually, but the point of bringing it up is that they don't have the global warming hoax here. The Russian people are not being told that cow farts are bad for the environment. They're not being told that, you know, man-made fossil fuels are killing the planet. What they're being told in Russia, openly, on a regular basis, it seems, is that a pole shift is coming. And when that pole shift comes, Russia is going to be a different place. Parts of it that have been frozen for centuries are going to suddenly start to thaw. Very interesting. Very interesting. Makes me want to, I really want to visit Siberia, and I plan on doing that. But every time I talk about this pole shift, it makes me want to visit there even more. But I've heard nothing but great things about Siberia. Siberia is not, I used to think Siberia was just constantly a frozen tundra. Once again, this is what I was, the propaganda, the American propaganda, but it's not. It's, from what I understand, it's a beautiful place. It's like Alaska. I'm sure. I haven't been there, but I don't think I finished saying that sentiment earlier, but like, yeah, when I first thought about coming here, I thought Russia is always cold and freezing, Every movie, I remember growing up with, like I said, growing up in the Cold War, you watch a lot of movies that have Russia as the bad guy. And in every movie, it's in the winter, it's gray, it's bleak, it's depressing, it's cold. And so I kind of thought that's how Russia is 24/7, all 365 days a year, which is funny because that's ridiculous. In fact, Moscow is like Cleveland and it's spring now. I actually, last night was the first night I had my window open all night long for the fresh air. Spring is here. I'm looking forward to summer. I enjoy, and I'm happy to be back into the four seasons. You know, I've spent over 10 years in the South in the nice weather, but there is something beautiful about four seasons. Spring is always a miracle. That's one thing. So I guess that's it. I'm trying to think if I missed anything. But yeah, hopefully they keep ignoring me or whatever. I don't really care. But if they do decide to shut me down simply because I'm in Russia legally as a tourist and simply because I want to share with my fellow Americans and the rest of the world how good, friendly, kind, and decent the Russian people are, and how we should be friends, and how the lies and continue to expose the lies that we're being told by our own government, who is straight up evil. Once again, you know, and the people, it drives me crazy what I see going on in America, the brokenness. There are people that are obsessing over what happened here Friday as if it's just a joke or as if it's a lie or it's just, oh, it's just another lie. It didn't really happen. It's all staged. It's all AI. It's heartbreaking to see that because it was clearly real. And the people here are grieving deeply. And even in their grief, they still have love for the American people, many of whom think this is just a big joke and don't care. Am I being harsh? Maybe. I'm just calling it the way I see it. Like I said, if I saw more decency and unity and strength, I would have stayed. But the way things were going, it would have been eventually getting thrown in jail, and then they would have, you know, my fellow Americans would just laugh at it. Oh, it's not real. He's not really in jail. It's AI. It's just all joke. So anyways, I love you guys, though. I don't want to get negative. And I appreciate it. And yeah, so if you want to sign up now for Boosty, it's just going to be a mirror for now of my Substack. You can switch over if you want, but that is where it's going to go if they turn it off over here, which is a possibility. But it feels good to finally be open about this. I've been hinting at it for a while. My close friends, I don't have many friends, but my friends have known, you know, pretty much since day one. I didn't really tell Alex until recently. I told him a month ago, and I guess he never got that message, so he never really found out until a couple days ago. Yeah. So there you have it. With love from Russia, I will talk to you next week.